Now in year number six, it's a Yank on the Footy with Craig Wessels. Everybody sit back and enjoy a chat about the greatest game on the face of the earth. Thanks for listening, everybody, and I do hope you'll share it with your friends and family. Cheers! Hello, everyone, and welcome to episode 320 of A Yank on the Footy. I'm Craig Wessels, coming from Sandusky, Ohio, and I'm thrilled that you're checking out this episode. In just a moment, I'm going to be joined by Michelle Gertz, the general manager of the Read the Play organization, to talk about her group's work with youth sporting clubs in and around the Geelong area. Very fascinating discussion. As a teacher for 30 years now, I thought this was a really important topic to broach on the podcast, and I was thrilled that Michelle was able to set aside some time to chat with me about this. I do hope you'll head over to my website, yankonthefooty.com, and get signed up on the mailing list, along with leaving a 5-star review for the podcast if you enjoy the show. I hope also you'll share it with your favorite friends who are big fans of footy as well. That would be a huge help for the podcast as well. Now, our club of the episode, and you'll soon hear why this is the club of the episode, they are the Bell Park Dragons, and the Dragons were formed back in 1958 and are members of the Geelong Football League. The Dragons football and netball teams are going to be opening up their 2024 fixtures on 6 April against North Ballarat. And on the 27th of April, the Dragons are going to be hosting their Ladies' Day beginning at 2 p.m. at the Bell Park Social Rooms with food, music, raffles, and lots of fun. And you can contact the club for information or get on Eventsbrite as well. Now, the Dragons have had some great, great VFL and AFL talent that have worn the green and white at one time or another during their preparatory time for the VFL and the AFL, including Carlton's, I believe, 107-game player, Fraser Murphy, Reese Matheson, who played with Brisbane up until this past year, James Werpel from Hawthorn, as well as Geelong's 305-game 2007 Brownlow medalist, 2011 Norm Smith medalist, and 3-time premiership player Jimmy Bartel. There's several others, but those were some of the players that spent a great deal of time playing in the highest level of the game. I do want to wish the Dragons the absolute best in 2024, and I'm hoping to be able to stop off and visit your club next year in the summer of 2025, my summer. Let's go ahead and jump into my chat with Michelle Gertz. All right, ladies and gentlemen, my guest for this episode is involved in Victorian sport in several facets, including currently serving as the chairperson of AFL Barwon and the general manager of Read the Play. And I am absolutely thrilled to welcome Michelle Gertz to the podcast. Michelle, good morning, ma'am. Thanks for coming on today.
Thank you for having me.
This is absolutely my pleasure. As we were talking off air a little bit before we got started here, I reached out to you back in, I believe, September of last year, and you were keen to come on, and I kind of dropped the ball and did not follow up with you, and you didn't tell me to stick it in my ear. I appreciate that. I very easily could have happened, but you have a very interesting story to tell, and I'm very thrilled to be able to share it with my listeners, and hope that it gets you more recognition or people interested in helping out in some facet or another. Before we dive into all of that, your career, from what I've gathered, you must have had a time in which you played netball or footy, and I'm not asking your age at all, but I don't know whether or not footy for women had kind of become in vogue again at that point in time, or you probably did play netball, because I know you're involved with netball at one point in time as well.
Yeah, look, I was unlucky that the football for women wasn't really a thing when I was probably, let's say, at my prime, which is probably not now. I think I've missed the boat slightly on that. I have been tempted in the last few years to give it a try, and I have decided not to. But, yeah, I started playing netball with my local club, Bell Park, back in 2000, and that's probably where before I hadn't really played netball, I was more tennis and hockey growing up. So it was just a new thing at Bell Park, where the netball section started within the football netball, which created the football netball clubs, which are really strong in this region. And yeah, it went from there. Obviously, played 126 games.
Wow.
But really took on And at like the admin role at the club, that was probably where my love really was in the governance side and
Okay.
the organisation of the actual sport itself. And went on to become president of the netball section. In that time, and then, funnily enough, progressed into Netball Victoria, so the state body. In through that sort of work locally in the governance side. So it was an organisation called Football Netball Geelong back then. It's actually called AFL Bowen now.
Okay.
But yeah, so I did sort of step through that netball pathway, probably more in a governance sense and in a administration sense rather than in actually the playing side. But certainly loved the game and that was a passion of mine back then, definitely. And I was really fortunate to sort of progress through to end up being in a leadership position with Netball Victoria. And yeah, love that. Love working with the elite team, the Melbourne Vixens, in that space and just working with, the whole state around making netball better and driving participation, which was really good fun. But yes, in answer to your question, I did miss the football boat. I played a little bit at school, so we were lucky enough to have a high school team, and that was probably once a year we got to play a little carnival. But I always loved kicking the footy around, and still do actually with my nephews now. I don't think I've got a bad right foot, no left foot, but it's a bit of fun still for sure. And I'm loving your backdrop because I'm a madcap myself, so this
I
is working
appreciate it.
well.
Yes, it's a I have over here, over my shoulder over here, I have to move my head. I became a Cat supporter. I had one player that drove me to become a Cat supporter back in 2016 and 2017, and it's always somebody that people are stunned by when I tell them who it was, because it was Nekiah Cockatoo. And
Yeah,
people are like,
right. Yeah.
really? And I was like, yeah. I said, when I started watching the game, before he started having all the little injuries that he had, and boy, what a career he could have had he been able to stay
I
healthy.
agree.
Oh my
Yes.
goodness. And just from everything I've heard, just an absolute gentleman of a human being as well. But he was like he looked like an NFL linebacker when he was playing out there, and it's kind of what drew me to becoming a Cat supporter. Because I had narrowed it down to the Cats and Brisbane, and well, the 0-3 Collingwood Magpies. Kind of like the sound of that after we started out 0-3 last year. But
Yeah, I think everyone's feeling the same way at the
yes,
moment.
I think they might be 0-4 after this week, because they've got Brisbane coming
It
up this
could
week.
be.
So, you studied sports administration at university. Is the fact that you got involved in playing the game that you really loved, and did you start into the admin side before you started college, or did the
Yeah.
was the admin side at college the horse, and the job became the cart?
Yeah, I think it was. Look, I've always loved sport, so grew up playing every sport and was encouraged to do so. Obviously, love footy as well. So, it was just something that's certainly in Geelong. I think most young kids growing up play some sport to a degree. When I was getting towards the end of my high school, it was becoming obvious that that was where I wanted to go. And I was really fortunate that there are and were back then. Many options to do a sport management or administration degree at university. And it was probably the within that degree, those 3 years, we were highly encouraged to volunteer at local clubs and get involved in those sorts of things. So I have Bell Park's my family club, so it was a place that I was always at. And then it just was, because of that encouragement to sort of build your networks and, always thinking about where your first job's going to come from after university. It was really just I'm going to put my hand up and I'm going to be on the committee and just really get involved and try and get some experience that way. So it sort of just morphed from there, really. It was, yeah, I was really fortunate that the club were really open to having a, 20-year-old on their committee that had no experience in anything other than just, run around the court, but it worked out well.
But it's also, I think that it sounds like they had the foresight to realize, and again, I don't know the cumulative age or the ages of the people that were involved in the committee, but generally those types of things tend to be people who are a little bit older.
Yeah.
And somebody evidently had the foresight to think, you know what, if we want to keep this thing vital and vibrant, Maybe it's not such a bad idea to bring somebody in that has some young ideas who might have some longevity to stick with this sort of thing for a while. So I think that was a
And
really
I
good move
think,
on their part.
yeah, no, I agree. And it wasn't just me, you know, when I think about that first committee I was on, yes, there was probably a few of the older brigade on there, but there was definitely encouragement for, you know, people like myself to get involved. And certainly with netball being really young and in the first couple of years of existing at that club, it was really important. And I think it's been set up really well from there.
Well, you said something that I have, and I again, I have not been to Australia. I was going to be coming this year. I've had a few things that have caused me to delay it till footy season 2025, and I plan on spending at least a month in Australia.
Awesome.
But I have argued that the football netball clubs are kind of the hub around which communities tend to rotate. And you talked about it have at Bell Park having been your family club. And is it am I correct in that thesis that those clubs, and I do it a club of the episode, and Bell Park's going to be the club for this episode, just so you know. I do a shout out for a club each episode. Am I correct that club is the thing, it's kind of the glue that brings together a community?
Look, it's spot on. I think that certainly local clubs like football, netball clubs become your family. They're there for you in good times and bad. And when you talk about bad times, you know, there's lots of examples even more recently for, you know, Bell Park as a club that, you know, there's been a few tragedies along the way, but people know that that's the place we can all get together and be with each other and support each other. And I think it's and even to extend that, we talk about family. So you can have, you know, mum and dad playing footy and netball, their children involved in the junior aspects of the club, you know, aunties and uncles. You know, I think of, you know, I play cricket for Bell Park currently, and you know, I look around and I see, you know, brothers playing and sisters playing, and you know, there we go, and you know, people are meeting their partners in that environment, and you know, those sorts of things. And look, it's I can't it's I can't talk highly enough of the importance of that piece within a community. It's as I said, it can be tennis clubs, it can be golf clubs. There's, you know, a lot of different things, but I think the certainly the difference with a footy netball club is that at the moment it's catering for, you know, for all genders and all age groups. And you know, even, you know, Bell Park have got an all abilities football team as well, which has just been the heartbeat the last few years, and everyone has just loved being involved with that and watching them succeed as well. So there's so many great things that come from those environments.
Yeah, I was sending my athletic director for my school a text message because he just sent me a note asking me how to unlock the cooler in our press box at the stadium because they have their first track meet of the season, and I have a key for announcing football and soccer there, and he's new this year, and he said, "Well, I don't have a key." I'm thinking, "You have a key, you just don't know where it is right now." So I was telling him, I said, "If you push down on the door, it should pop open for you." So, I just that's one of the things that I want to experience when I am there is to visit the local clubs to see for myself just how close-knit these people are because it looks to be it just looks to be such an awesome familial type situation. And it's where even at the AFL clubs where they have the little cafes and such in their facilities and such, where the supporters of the club will go in to have coffee or have a sandwich or whatever, and they may be sitting right next to, players from the club and such. I mean, that's I you know I joke about that here. You're never going to run into LeBron James at at the local convenience store because his wife had called him up, and I'm not sure in terms of what size the packaging is. I'm guessing maybe a 2 liter bottle of milk or something of that nature, and say, "Hey, we need some milk and bread. Stop it." You're never going to run into LeBron James there, or Pat Mahomes. It's never going to happen. But you might run into your club's favorite player, at the store
Yeah,
at
more
it.
often than not.
Yeah.
I think you'll love the Cats Cafe when you visit next year. It's you can actually sit and watch them. There's an indoor training facility that's you can just sit and watch through the glass. So and they do get coffees and lunches and things, and it is a mingling thing. And I think it just, to be honest, it's probably just become a bit normal for people. Like, you know, you sit in there and you see Tom Hawkins walk in and grab a coffee and you think, oh yeah, hi, you know.
Yeah.
But it's just normal, really. So it is. It's a certainly a great thing. And I know busy during school holidays when, you know, kids probably beg their parents to take them in there and have
Right,
a look.
right.
Yeah, it's
I could imagine that. That would be, it seems like a lot of fun. And there's a gentleman who lives over in Adelaide who I talk with quite a bit, who's a Port Adelaide supporter, and I guess he established some sort of a routine with Kenny Hinkley where they would end up at the same coffee shop in the mornings on like the Monday after a game. And if Port had won that day, then he bought Kenny Hinkley's coffee for him. And if they'd lost, Kenny Hinkley bought his coffee for him. So it was just, just kind of, it's something that I don't know if I don't know if I'm envious of it because I really don't watch much sport here in the United States anymore. I'll watch my favorite NFL team, but I don't watch the NBA. I don't watch college basketball. I used to be a huge, massive baseball fan. I was a bigger baseball fan than anything. And I'm so frustrated with Major League Baseball that I've not watched that game in 5 years. I mean, it's just, I watch footy and I've started to, as you saw there, I've started to explore cricket a little bit. Now, cricket purists will be, will kind of roll their eyes when I tell them that, I've tried to watch, test cricket a little bit, but it's really long. So I really enjoyed the T20 format. Just watched every game from the Pakistani Super League that was, from the last few weeks, and now India has started up, and just absolutely enjoying watching cricket. It's a lot of fun. So you spent time, getting your degree in sports administration, and then you spent a little over 5 years working for the Department of Justice and Community Safety in Victoria. And am I reading into that that that's something dealing with law enforcement and that sort of thing, or maybe dealing with people who have possibly run afoul of the law and after, and this is after part of the punishment where you're overseeing them?
Yes, it is. And look, that one surprised me more than you would know in terms of how I appeared there. It was really a, you know, I'd finished at Netball Victoria, I'd been overseas and travelled for a bit, came back and thought I'd probably need to start working again. And it was a job that was advertised, and it was a stakeholder engagement and relationship type role, the first one that I took on there, and thought I'll apply and I'll, you know, won't get anywhere. And I applied and I got an interview, and I thought I'll get the interview, but I won't get the job. And anyway, I got the job and thought, you know, what am I doing? I'd never been in public service before, let alone in, you know, the criminal side, I suppose, of it
Right,
and the
right.
law side of it. So it was an eye-opener for me. The first job that I actually took on there was the regional manager for the community work program. So that's essentially people that go to court, are convicted of something but not put in jail. They'll come back to
Okay.
our system and community corrections and might have to work off X amount of hours of community service. So it was my job to, with my team, to find like external placements for them.
Okay.
So businesses in the region that were keen to get some assistance from people that, you know, could do certain skills. So it was that sort of placement piece, which I think in if I look at all the other roles that were within the community corrections, that was probably the best one for me. I don't think I would have liked to have done anything else because it's a pretty tough world,
Yeah.
corrections. There's very few good news stories, unfortunately. There's a lot of really unfortunate stories of families involved in the system, and so you really had to hang on to the stories that were positive and that people were breaking that cycle and you
Okay.
know, doing great things with their lives and that sort of thing. So yeah, it was definitely different.
Well, it sounds like it was much more complex than what I imagined it being. I I thought it might be, the people out, walking down the M1 with the large trash bag picking up trash, but you were actually trying to match people up with things that they had the skill set for. And did those things then turn into the possibility of maybe a lo long-term employment after the fact, where if this person did that job well enough that the employer might say, we'd like to keep this person on.
Yes, there was a particular program that we ran called Cooking for Confidence. So we had a qualified chef that came in and actually taught 20 people it was actually in a sporting club in the
Okay.
kitchen and taught them the basics of cooking. It was a 10-week program, and at the end of that 10 weeks, we put on a luncheon for external people to come in. So it was an experience for them. The number one point of that was learning to cook for your family and understanding that it isn't that costly. So it's cheaper to go and, create a spaghetti bolognese from a supermarket than it is to buy the family McDonald's, essentially. So that was the number one purpose of it, was to really, provide them with the skills. But the great thing was, and one of my favorite stories was, that we had a guy that was in the program, and he'd had a lot of trouble with the law. He'd been in jail, drugs, you name it. He had mental health problems as well. This program actually really turned everything for him, and he decided that this was a space that he really wanted to be in. And after that, he actually then got a job in catering, in hospitality. And I actually bumped into his mother-in-law only a couple of months ago, and she still talks about how great that program was for him, and how magnificent he is now. And his family is just, that everyone's just thriving. So when I talk about good news stories, you hang on to those, because you probably get one out of 100 of those. So it was definitely probably more complex than I thought as well. But it was one of those things that you thought, the better the placements we could give them, the better opportunity they had to really turn things around. So it was actually really rewarding to be part of that, for sure.
Okay, so you did that for a little over 5 years, and you as I mentioned to you off air, you went from that position to the position that you hold right now. And I was wondering what kind of connections there would have been. And you're working with this organization now called Read the Play, which is a regional, and I love the name of it, because you hear it, that phrase mentioned watching, broadcasts of games and that sort of thing. Maybe unless it's BT, then you're probably not going to hear it with BT saying anything like
I
that.
think
But
you're right.
But next year, from what I gather, because we get on the Friday night games, you get the Channel 7 broadcasts, which you got Joel Selwood on there now, which is a nice thing. But I guess next year, Fox will get to because we get all that stuff, all like the halftime stuff through Fox Footy on the Watch AFL app. But supposedly they'll have their own broadcasters on Fox doing the games on Friday nights next year, which I'm not sure if that's a good thing, but it's going to be something different. But so you transitioned from that position to Read the Play, and this was, this was something I was really fascinated by. But tell us about what Read the Play is, and what it is that you do, and then we're gonna kind of peel this onion back a little bit more and delve into it a little bit more deeply.
Look, and just to start that, I suppose the reason that I have moved into a position like this is because of the work that I did at Justice. I think it's definitely, I guess, really solidified in me what I wanted to be doing going forward, and it was to serve my community more. And it was obviously, I had this role that was a bit different with Justice. But I thought, wow, imagine if I could just wholly and solely focus every part of my day on something that I can see that impacts my local community. So that was the thought process for me. And it was, if I hadn't done that justice job, I might not be where I am now.
Okay.
I might have gone to sport. So that's actually been a really important step for me in really learning about me and what I want to do going forward. So, but yes, Read the Play. We're in our 18th year, and we for those 18 years, we've been delivering mental health education and literacy programs to under 18s in sporting clubs, predominantly the football netball clubs over that time. That is an hour program that we deliver at a club, and we try to provide some wraparound support for that club as well. So it's not a some of the programs that we see are sort of a fly in and deliver and fly out, and there's not really anything around it. And what we try and provide is an environment where a club will appoint a player well-being officer. We think that's a great point of difference for us, that we've got someone at the local club that we can upskill, provide resources and information to, and then they're there to support players, coaches, parents, anyone at that club that may have or may be experiencing something there as well. So it is a super rewarding job to do every day, and it's great to wake up and go, right, what am I going to do, and how does this impact our young sporting players, I suppose.
And I'm kicking myself right now because had I not changed my schedule for this year, I would have been able to make it to your fundraiser breakfast, which we'll talk about in a little bit on the 18th of July. I would be in Australia at that time and would have loved to have attended that, but maybe next year's I'll get to come for
Yeah,
that one then.
absolutely.
So would absolutely love to do that. But it just seems like a really, really wonderful program. And as I said, I've been a teacher for 30 years at the high school level, and just seeing, an organization like this that's being proactive in terms of recognizing that, the whole stigma of mental health issues is something that you shouldn't be shying away from, that people should be, feel comfortable to share their feelings, because it does, and I think especially with even young athletes, because teenagers, there's always that issue of peer pressure and don't say anything because you're going to look like a wimp or what, you just have to be able to divest yourself from that sort of thing and just be honest with yourself. And it's I think it's a wonderful program that you're doing, and you've got basically several different phases of it that. You get the huddle up for different age levels. You've got, and I think, did I delete the other two? No, I
Huddle
didn't.
Up, we're actually delivering this year. So what we do is we assume a young person spends 2 years in an age group. Huddle Up is being delivered this year to our 14 to 16-year-olds, football and netball players, and that's got a cyberbullying, bullying connotation to it. So everything for us is about mental health and well-being, supporting yourself, understanding what mental health is, helping your mates. But then there's always a theme to it that we add. So the cyberbullying aspect is one of those, and that actually came from there used to be a program at the Cats called Cyber Cats, and we've kind of when that sort of finished up at the Cats, we kind of used some of that information to build our new program there. So, and then the other program that we deliver, so that was the one that we delivered last year, and we will next year, is called MVP. Again, mental health, but also a suicide prevention piece. And unfortunately, that's the age group that we need to be having those discussions with, because this is the age group that unfortunately is the numbers are quite high in terms of suicides here in Australia, and probably worldwide too, I would imagine. So that's a little heavier in content, but a really important one to have, because it's even just recognizing signs and symptoms in other people too, that that's sort of what we want to get to. We're in a team environment, and when you're on the field or on the court, you're always supporting each other and making everyone better. So it's about what we do, when we're not actually playing, and how we support each other too.
So what is that moment or that event, since you've been working with this organization, that you just were, you saw things happening, or the little instance that occurred where you realized and you kind of looked at yourself maybe in a metaphorical mirror right at that moment, and you said to yourself, I'm in the right place. I'm doing what I need to be doing here.
Oh, look, I reckon it was probably our fundraiser breakfast last year. So that was probably, I was in the role for 11 months at that point, and it had been a whirlwind. So coming in, we're a charity, so And I'm the general manager. And when we say general, like very general, day to day, my role might be that I'm, paying a bill one aspect of the day, and then I'm speaking to a politician by the end of the day. So it's a really broad spectrum of everything. But I think getting 300 people in the room at GMHBA Stadium in August last year, and having two excellent speakers in Neil Baum, obviously former Richmond player and coach, and was at the Cats, and his young son Will, who had experienced his own mental health problems and was on a bit of a journey with that. And that was probably the moment in time where I thought, this is the place that I need to be. I can see that we're having an impact here. And when you can get, maybe half of those 300 people wouldn't have known who Read the Play was, but at the end of it, come up to you. And we had multiple huge donations of people walking out the door and tapping their credit cards, going, "This is amazing." And I thought, gee, if we can build on this, look at what we're going to do, look at who we can support, because obviously, the more money that we generate, the more we can do in our in the community and support all of those young people that, will experience some sort of mental health difficulty at some point in their lives. So I think that was the catalyst for me to go, wow, I just can't wait to do more in this space. And it's, as I said, very easy to wake up every day knowing that this is the job I get to do.
Outstanding. Yeah, that's I've after 30 years of teaching, I still feel that way about 99 days out of 100. But there's always that one day where I'm like, nah, I really don't want to go in. But I end up going in. I have like 275 sick days saved up. So I could take about a year and a half off from school and still have a couple days left over. But I was scrolling through the website, and I looked at the Seek Help site. Basically is I think is a wonderful first step for maybe people that you've not spoken to or been able to do your presentation for, who've maybe heard of your organization of and stumble isn't the right word, but they've come across your website, and you're giving them the tools and the locations to where they can go and speak to somebody else that is, outside of necessarily the framework of your organization. Because yes, you're doing these meetings with these clubs and that sort of thing, but this somebody may be an outlier who's with a club you've not had the opportunity to meet with, but doesn't mean they don't need to talk to someone. So I think
No, exactly right.
it's great that you have that sort of thing there for them. And it's and I will link to all of these things in the show notes. Now, have you And I was looking at kind of the flow chart that you had on there as well, in terms of involving parents and club officials. Have you ever found an instance where you've had people who have kind of pushed back against it, or because because there's always somebody who's going to be contrary, but is there are there instances that you can share or talk about with regards to that? Because I don't want to get into things that you're not allowed to discuss. I'm not trying to do that and put you on the spot like that.
Yeah, look, sorry, that was my dog coughing in the background too. She's not 100%, so just wondering what that weird
Minor
noise is.
barking downstairs. So yes.
That's all right.
Yes.
Look, yes, I think we do, and I think it comes in a few different forms. Most of it is probably previous traumas of individuals, and protecting. So I think when we have a trigger warning at the start of the presentations where we're saying, look, we're going to be discussing themes around mental health, suicide, bullying, etc. And there's a mechanism within that that people can leave the room but give us a bit of a thumbs up or a thumbs down if they need someone to follow them up or not. So I think that's really important. But we find, and look, there's only, not even a handful when we're running, 50 programs a year as we are at the moment. There's only a handful of feedback around that. And generally it's just people that haven't probably got the education around what the discussion points are. So when we talk about suicide, there can be an assumption out there that if we talk about it, then that means that kids will go and do it. That's actually not true, and there's research that suggests it's the opposite, so that's why we talk about it. But sometimes we can get feedback in a session that says, hey, we shouldn't be talking about that because of this. So that's an education piece for us, and that's a learning for us around trying to get as much information out to a club as possible before a session so those questions can be answered. And then there's occasions where we might be delivering a session and we're unaware that there might be someone in the room that has experienced something themselves, or a family member or a friend. So the important thing for us is, again, to try and get as much intel as we can around what group we're delivering to, so we can understand that and put things in place and to support that person, or that person might not participate in the program or whatever. We do get a lot of queries around our program because there has been an issue or a mental health problem or an instance of, unfortunately, someone has suicided at the club. That's probably a piece where we ask them to look at other options first. So we're not a bereavement service, we're a preventative program. So for me, it's definitely, look, we're here to support you, and we can provide you with resources that will support you at this time, but the program isn't the right time. So there's a few of those sorts of things that sort of come up, but generally the program is really well received, and the great thing now is club personnel are seeking out these programs. So it's not us going, oh, look, we're here to deliver this program for free again this year. They're going, great, when can we lock it in? When's the booking system open? We want to put this in our schedule. So for me, that's actually really, really heartwarming, because it means that what we're doing is working, and there's an expectation every year that we're coming back, which is great.
So, how can a football netball club get involved with your organization if they've not been involved with? Because I know that I go to the website, there's a pop-up that talks about involving 10 clubs. I mean, is that the cap that you have on it for each year at this point in time, or are you trying, and are you always looking for more people that you can train as volunteers to go out and be part of this program to work with, to kind of grow exponentially, if you will, the message.
Yeah, look, at the moment we run the program for free in football netball clubs in this region to anyone that wants it. So we last year, I think all but three of the clubs participated in some form. So I think there's 52 junior clubs. I think we had 48 or 49 that were involved in some degree. Some did football only, some did netball only, some did both, which is fine. So in terms of that, it's great. The pop-up that you saw on the website was a local partner of ours have given us money to actually try and branch out to sports that don't get the program from us as a guarantee. So we're trying to build our network, I suppose, of clubs that want help, and we can provide the service. So there's an option at the moment for 10 clubs. I think we've had in the expression of interest, there's four that have already signed up. So we've still got provision to do more. And to be honest, I'll do more as well. It's just this is just a little promotional piece that helps us get the word out a little bit. Our strategic plan is in year one, and our aim at the end of this year is to deliver the program to 1,500 young people. So we did just over 1,000 last year, and we're building a fourth program currently. It's around teenage brains and risk taking, which I'm sure you'll have some thoughts on probably as well, being a teacher. That's something that we'll be piloting with our basketball partnership in May, and then that will go live by later in the year. And I'm waiting on some outcomes of some funding sort of applications that will allow us to develop two 12 to 14 year old programs. Now, they'll be probably more resilience than mental health, but we're looking at smoking and vaping and alcohol themes around those two programs. And again, that's something that is certainly been highlighted in this area at the moment as issues for young people. And then our aim, so for the following 2 years of our strat plan, all goes well, this time next year, we've got six programs from the 12 to 18 year old range that we're going to say we're open to anyone in the region that wants these programs. We want to deliver it. So by December 2025, We want to have hit 7,500 young people.
Okay.
And then the following year, we want to double it again. And so we've got target 15,000 by the
Now,
end of 2026.
yeah, a couple things. When you said that sometimes the clubs will have both the football and netball clubs get the presentation, and do some clubs prefer to have the footy clubs go separate and the netball clubs go separate or together, or how does that work? I mean, are there aspects of the presentations to where, you would want to maybe have the boys group and the girls group separate or together? I mean, or does that really matter?
No, it doesn't matter. It's really up to the club and how they want to
Okay.
structure it. So, what we
Okay.
find at our larger clubs that have got multiple teams, we'll probably sit them in their under 16 boys football, under 16 girls football, 15 and under netball, and do programs that way.
Okay.
A smaller club that might only have one under 16 footy and one 15 under netball might say, we're just going to do one workshop together and combine them. We probably find the interaction's probably better if they're separate, unless they're close in terms of friends, in the group. But I think sometimes maybe the girls in the group might be less likely to speak up in that mixed environment. But again, I think it's just we leave that up to the clubs to make the call. They understand their groups and what is going to work well.
That's
And I've
interesting.
actually been in workshops where where mixed has worked really, really well.
Okay. Now, you talk about you're trying to grow it into other games and have six programs up and running by, I think you said December 2025. Is there hope to then push this northward into Melbourne proper as well, and possibly, getting redeploy programs up and running in other states?
Yes, I think in a long-term vision that I have and our board have is our idea at the moment is that we wanted to really embed ourselves in this area where we are based
Right,
and
right.
really create a model that's robust, sustainable, we know how it works and then look to expand.
Okay.
In the past we have actually sort of expanded across a few different locations in Victoria, and quite successfully. COVID sort of probably curtailed that a little bit. So when I came into the role, I thought, all right, let's just get to a point where we think we're comfortable in this area. This program's working really well and thriving. And then how do we look at picking it up and popping it into another area within the state, probably as a starting point. But, I think that we probably should be thinking as big as we possibly can with this because for me, this is a program that we can offer to any sport. It's not a football orientated or a netball orientated program. It really is set up that it's for all sports, and that's the
Right.
way we want it to be.
Now, is it something that could possibly be expanded into, and I don't know necessarily the participation rates in terms of how many young people are involved in sport, whether it be soccer, basketball, footy, netball, that sort of thing. But are there organizations that kids are involved in that are maybe not athletic groups who might be wanting to consider reaching out to you as well? Maybe some sort of like a,
And
you know, I mean, I've for example, I've been the Model United Nations advisor at my school for, gosh, it seems like 1,000 years now. But maybe a group like that, even that maybe a lot of those kids are not involved in athletics.
and look, we currently do that. It's probably our programs are probably a little sport themed,
Okay.
so that's something that we can certainly adjust based on the cohort that's interested in having the program delivered. But having said that, we've actually delivered the program for the last, I would say, multiple years to a charity called Cottage by the Sea. They're based down in Queenscliff, so down on the coast, and they're really all about supporting young people from all over. They come in and they spend time at this place, and they've got some difficulties at home or in other circumstances, so. We've done some work with those groups over the last, numerous years to support them. And that's something that's just part of our annual calendar and something that it's a little give back from us to them. You know, we understand what it's like to be a charity too. And you know, the great thing about everyone here in Geelong is that they support each other really well. So that's actually something that even our volunteers love going down and doing something. It's a bit different. It's not a sporting club, it's a different setting. Kids from different places, you know, across Victoria as well, which is excellent.
So what has been the, you know, we talked about, you know, well, I guess I kind of did ask you this question already, but you know, what's been the most inspiring moment that's come around since your time with Read the Play? Is that, I'm not sure if that's a different question than the one I asked you a little bit earlier, but it, you know, the one where you recognize, okay, this is where I'm supposed to be.
Yeah.
Go ahead.
Yeah, look, I think there's so many different aspects of it that are, you know, and when you come out next year, I'd love you to come and have a look at one of the programs that, you know,
I would
and
love to.
see it in the flesh, because what you see from the start to the end, that's the inspirational piece. The people that are delivering it on behalf of Read the Play are magnificent people and come from so many different places. So we've got psychologists, we've got mental health clinicians, we've got teachers, but then we've got people that have got lived experience. So, and these are the ones that I enjoy the most, because our presenters are actually vulnerable. They talk about their own issues, they talk about what's happened to themselves. And I think you can see switches flick for those young people in the room to think, wow, you know, this adult in front of me, and look, they're quite young as well, and if I'm thinking of a specific presenter, but they're not that much older than me, and look, they're up there talking about that they've definitely had, you know, issues across the time, but they've had support from family and they've talked to them, and they're so powerful. It's not just a, you know, reciting a PowerPoint presentation and, you know, we're here and then we're done and see you later. It's so much about the interaction that happens within those actual workshops. But you can see it, and I hear that from our presenters and, you know, volunteers. When they've completed a program, you have conversations with them and they'll say, oh, that, you know, I could see there was a young person in the room that I could tell a difference. There was something there. And we know from research that we've had done from Deakin University that 1 in 11 young people have actually sought help within 8 weeks of doing the program. So that's really powerful, that piece as well. So we've actually got evidence that what we're doing is working in terms of people having conversations. You know, we don't know anything else after that. We don't know what's transpired. But for us, if we can hang our hat on and say, you know what, because someone's doing this program, they feel comfortable enough to go up to their player wellbeing officer, their coach, their parent, whoever it is, to say, hey, I think I'm struggling. Can you support me and help me? And that's, you know, for me, that's enough.
That is admirable. And the more that you do it, as you come back to a club that, you know, and you do, you know, another presentation with the next age group, which may be some of the same kids getting different information, it may resonate with them at that point in time where maybe they didn't feel comfortable asking for help, but now they're like, okay, these people really do, you know, have an interest in my well-being. I can, you know, raise my hand and say, hey, I've got something that I'm dealing with.
Yeah. And the repetition's important too. I think we obviously have our programs, you know, we don't like to deliver the same content again and again and again. So that's why we've got some different themes. Having said that, there might be a point in time where a young person completes our program and it has absolutely, it just doesn't resonate at all. There's no issue, nothing going on, and they're like, you know, don't even know why I needed to do that. But like you said, they then come and do another program in another age group later on, and all of a sudden it does. There might be just that flick of the switch, and they're like, oh, actually, that's me. I've been experiencing this. I've been feeling this way. Oh, you know, here's this. Or alternatively, there's young people in the room that can see it in their friends. Oh, there's been a change in behavior. And that's the sort of stuff that we're talking about. That's what you want to look for. So I
Well,
think it's, yeah, that's the piece for me, is the more the better.
I have an Oscar. Well, I have several hundred quotations hanging up in my classroom, but I have one that I have printed in color. All the rest are in black and white, and it's an Oscar Wilde quote that hangs right in the front of my room, right in the center of the room. that says true friends stab you in the front.
Yes.
And it's as you're just saying there, that a peer may be recognizing that one of their friends is behaving a little bit differently, and they may say, please consider, talking to Johnny or Fred or whomever, because I'm noticing this difference, and maybe Fred hasn't figured out how to verbalize or to come forward and say, hey, I do need some help. Which
That's
I
exactly right.
yeah yeah so before we move on to a couple little things to wrap up, are there any misconceptions? Are there any things about Read the Play that people have gotten wrong that you feel you need to clarify at all, or have you had really good publicity and press from everybody that's talked about your organization?
Yeah, look, it's not something that I've experienced in the sort of 18 or so months that I've been in the role. I think there's been a lot of work over a lot of time. When you've been in this space for 18 years, I'd say we're probably one of the trailblazers in terms of mental health education in sporting clubs. There's obviously a lot more options now, which is great. I think the more the better. And clubs picking different options for different reasons is also great. School settings, I think, too, is where there's some really great complementary programs around what we do. But I think sometimes the name, people get confused, and I was really rapt as that you understood the read the play connotation in terms of reading the play. But there's some people that are like, oh, are you involved in the arts, or as in play, as in a
Yes,
production.
of
So
course.
there's probably a little bit of that where I think it's not so much misconception, but probably a lack of visibility here. I think I was probably surprised coming into the role at how little general people knew about what we did. So one of the big things that I've worked with our board over the last 18 months is that visibility piece and what we can do to really get ourselves out there for different reasons. Obviously, within a sporting club, there's a good understanding of what we do, but then more broadly in our community, we want people to know what we're doing, because they might be volunteers, they might be sponsors, they could be a donor, they could be just looking for support for some reason, they might be a parent. And that actually, I'll just say that too, is one of the things that we've looked at for this year is really wrapping support around a club. And we've got two parent education sessions that are free coming up in April and May. And that the theme of those will be an assumption that your child might complete Read the Play this year in any sport. So we want to tell them in advance what we do. So we're Read the Play. This is why we exist. These are our programs and why. And then we've got Barwon Health, who's the local health service here, coming in to do a presentation on mental health signs and symptoms, and then local resourcing, so where you can get help in the region. And finally, we've got child psychologist and our Read the Play patron, Dr. Michael Carr-Greg, coming in to do a presentation that's really specific as well. So this is the stuff that we want to provide because we know that it's important. So it's the young person, we know we're ticking the box there. And then we've got someone based at the club that we can help with resourcing and support too, but then the parent on top of that. So when the child goes home, there's more support there. So that's sort of what we're trying to build this year, and we're really looking forward to those programs as well.
That's outstanding. I mean, if somebody wants to learn more about your organization, or maybe they want to contribute or volunteer, how do they go about getting in touch with you?
The website is the best place to start, and our social media as well. And when I say general manager, I'm managing the socials as well. So I'll respond to messages through there too. But info at readtheplay.org.au is the best email address. Myself and my colleague Chrissy have access to that email, and we just love to hear from anyone that's interested in having a conversation about anything, really. We're always looking for volunteers, obviously, as we scale up the program, and we want to deliver to 15,000 young people in 2026. That means we'll need a lot more volunteers and presenters to be part of the program as well, which, again, we know they're out there. We just want to find them and talk to them.
And I'm assuming that you do a great deal of advertising for your fundraiser that's going to be coming up in July ahead of time. So it's so you're working on trying to network with as many people and have them bring their plastic with them, as you'd mentioned before. So
Exactly,
yeah, exactly.
exactly.
Okay.
Yeah.
So before we go, just a couple of other, just a little, to step away from read to play, but just a little bit, more about Michelle before we go here. So what's the best advice you ever received?
Do you know what I reckon it was probably from university lecturers at uni was about networking and talking to people. I think that there was definitely an encouragement back then about nothing's going to come to you, you've got to make it happen. So that was one thing that I took out of it. And it's probably obviously when I went and did that volunteering at the club and started off that way, but having that willingness to be a bit bold and ask questions and to put yourself out there. And I think as a young person, that's actually really difficult to do. But if I look back now and I think, gee, I've got some good opportunities because I've been in a position where I've asked. And I think, even now in a charity space, I am surprised at the generosity of people, and I love it because generally if I ask for something or help, I get it every time. And people hear what you do and love it. So I think that's probably something that has flowed on for me is the courage to ask the question, to be a little uncomfortable at times with that, but to sort of put it out there. And I think that's probably the big one for me.
Okay. So what motivates you? What gives you drive? That when that alarm clock goes off, besides the dog saying, "Hey, I need to go out," what is it that gets you up in the morning and gets you going and makes you want to go seize that day?
Look, it is, and as I said before, I've realized over the time that community is the most important thing to me, and giving back. So I'm in a position now, I'm the chair of AFL Barwon, and it's a voluntary role that I love doing because I really care about the football netball club environment, and I've been there and I've been in different positions, and I want to see that thrive. So that's number one for me. And then how lucky am I? I get to serve my community here in Geelong, and I get paid for it as well. And I see outcomes for young people, and everyone has experienced their own mental health journey. I'm the same. I've had times when I haven't been right, and I've had people that have supported me along the way too. Yeah, we've all been there, and I think that's important to talk about. But yeah, I'm in a position now where I can actually see every minute of every day that I put into Read the Play, there's an outcome, and it's a positive outcome for young people, for clubs, for parents. As you can tell, I could talk about it for hours, about how lucky I am to be in this position.
So going to talk a little bit about footy. What's your greatest footy memory from whatever level? And you're a supporter of the same club that I've got, back right behind me here, but
Do you know my favorite one, and you'll be surprised because it wasn't a successful day, was the 1989 grand final. And I'll talk about the week. So this was back in the day before Ticketmaster and Ticketek, and for finals tickets you had to camp at Cadinia Park. So I remember I was with my best friend Kate, her dad and my dad. And we pitched a tent because we had to line up for, it would have been, I think it was Sunday morning grand final tickets. So
okay.
everyone had their chairs out. The cats are playing in the prelim. If they win, we've got to get in line and we've got to get these tickets. So that was one of the best weeks ever. So we got to camp out. I was 10.
Okay.
So great fun. It's probably a bit chilly, but great fun. We'll kick in the footy. There's, probably 1,000 people down there all lining up for tickets. It was the best, the fun. And we got the tickets, so that's great.
Okay.
And then we go grand final day. We get on the train at whatever time in the morning. It would have been early. MCG, there's the barbecues going. There's just all sorts of things. And again, we get our face painted, and it's the best. And I remember the game. I mean, Gary Ablett is my all-time favorite player and junior as well. So I had the number 5 on my back, and obviously mammoth game from that perspective, and we fall just short. I don't
Right.
actually remember being really disappointed by that as a 10-year-old, because wow, what a day. And then it continued. So we went back to Geelong. We go to the town hall in the city, and everyone watches a replay. Who watches a replay of a game that you
You
lose?
lost. Yeah. Wow.
And there are thousands and thousands of people in the city. It's like a win. They present the players up on the stage, I think, at one
Right.
point. How great is that?
I'm going to guess that Adelaide did not do that last year with their game with Sydney.
No.
Yeah, I don't think they did. Yeah. So, is there a law that you would like to see implemented in local footy that does not exist?
Ooh. Oh, I don't think so. I think we can overcomplicate footy a bit at
Okay.
times. So I wonder about, there's a lot of tweaking of football rules, even from an AFL perspective, probably more than
Stand.
any other sport that
Right.
you'd see. Yeah. So it probably surprises me how much tweaking is done year to year of our rules. When you perhaps look at other sports, and I'll look at netball, for example, there's very, very few changes in netball rules. There's actually been a few that have come out this year, but that's not an annual thing. That's an international sport too. But I probably am surprised at the unintended consequences that come from that. And I think that, obviously those things are tweaked along the way, but it probably does surprise me at how much tweaking is done annually. I think we tend to pick those up anyway. But yeah, no, I can't think of anything locally that I would add that would, I think, enhance the game at all.
Now you are a Geelong local, and
I am.
the people who run GMBHA Stadium give you a phone call and they say, "We're having a music festival," and you get to decide what three acts are going to be performing. Who's going to be performing at Cardinia Park at your weekend festival?
Okay, Silverchair
Okay.
is my number one. I wish that they still existed as a band together. Ed Sheeran, I
Okay.
would definitely fly out for. And probably Powderfinger.
Okay.
Yeah,
Okay.
they're probably my three. Yeah,
Powderfinger. I'm gonna have to look that. I think I know who
you
they
should.
are.
Silverchair and Powderfinger, I actually watched them. They were in a concert. They did a concert together a long time ago, and it was one of the best. But yeah, two great local Australian icons, I suppose. And then yeah, look, I love an Ed Sheeran concert. It's always good fun.
Okay, I'm trying to think if they. Okay, they're not who I thought they were then. Okay, it's a different band than I was thinking then. Okay, and they formed up in 1989, it looks like then. Okay, all right. So last question that I have for you before we wrap up here, I'm going to be making the trek in 2025. Besides watching as much footy as I can, what's the one thing that I need to put on my schedule to make sure that I see?
Ah,
You
good
are
question.
the first person I'm asking that question to.
Good question. Oh, gee, there's so many, I reckon. Are you talking about Geelong, Victoria, or Australia?
Well, I'm probably going to be in Victoria. I'm thinking what my plan was for this year was I was going to get an Airbnb in Melbourne and just take the train down quite often to Geelong, because there were more Airbnb options in Melbourne than there were in Geelong.
Yes. Yep. No, that's fair. I think, oh, gee. The one thing that comes to mind for me that I actually love doing, I haven't done it for a long time, the Penguin Parade at Phillip Island is probably one of the best things that you could do. And
Okay.
I don't even know.
Nope. I
And that's
know of
more of a recreational activity, but
I know of Phillip Island because I listened not too long ago to a true crime podcast about Phillip Island, And they were talking about a book that was written, and I cannot remember the specific crime, but it was a very prominent family that lived there. And supposedly that book is illegal to sell on that island.
There you
Yes.
go.
Yeah. I remember, because I remember them talking about the Penguin Parade. Yes, I remember that.
Yeah, so it is good fun. Oh, and look, I think the opportunity to Melbourne's the sporting capital of the world. I would imagine whatever you've got lined up in the period of time you'll be there, you'll be able to see all sorts of different things happening. And I'm happy to help you with a netball game at the elite level and a, you
I
know.
would love to see that. I've watched a little bit of that. I mean, it's I need to learn the rules of that game because it's you know, there are some similarities to basketball, but there is also some significant differences as well.
There definitely is. Yes,
Yes.
that's right.
So
Yes.
it is it's a very unique game. And I'm just thinking, can't they take up a collection for a backboard? I don't know.
And dribble the ball rather
Well,
than standing
I think the back one step at a time with the backboard. We'll add new laws in later on, and then, but no, it's just a very unique game. I'm pretty comfortable now with cricket. I think I've picked up on every basic rule of that game or every law. They call there there's law. I think
laws.
they do call laws. Yes, yeah.
Yeah,
I remember
laws.
watching a Stephen Fry video about that, and I actually have the book downstairs, The Idiot's Guide to Cricket. So, and I actually had that gentleman that wrote that book, I actually had on the podcast. So that was great as well. So, Michelle, I want to thank you for taking time out of your morning to sit down and chat. You know, read the play. Can you give us the website again before you go so we
Yeah.
could have people check that out?
So it's readtheplay.org.au.
Okay, and I will put that link in the show notes, and I've got a couple of other links that I was going to put in there as well. I actually had I think I had your YouTube clip that I watched earlier today that I had on that I was going to link on there as well. Then I think I actually linked to your like specifically the strategic plan there as well because I like the layout of that in terms of where your goals are and where you're planning on being. But ladies and gentlemen, my guest has been Michelle Gertz and from Read the Play. And Michelle, this has been an absolute pleasure. I truly thank you for taking time out of your morning to sit down and chat. And I wish you the absolute best with your organization. And I hope you meet all of your goals. I hope you exceed all of your goals.
Thank you very much. Really appreciate the chat too.
You bet. You bet. Cheers. All right, Michelle, thanks so very much for jumping on the podcast and chatting about your organization's terrific work. I love being able to share stories like this, and I think you're doing wonderful, wonderful things for the sporting community in and around Geelong. Ladies and gentlemen, look out for one another. Check up on your friends and family. Give them a call, please. If you need to talk to somebody, please reach out to someone. Those numbers are always listed in the show notes of every single episode of the podcast, both for Australia and here in the United States. Remember, ladies and gentlemen, you can find everything related over to my podcast at my website, yankonthefooty.com. I do hope you'll get on the mailing list, as I'd mentioned earlier in the episode. If you like the podcast, I hope consider leaving a review as well. If you want to help out the podcast, you can certainly do that by clicking on that Buy Me a Coffee button and making a donation. If you want to leave a voicemail, you can do that as well. If you've got an idea for a guest, if you know somebody who would be a great guest on the podcast, please reach out. You can find me on Twitter, on Instagram, on Facebook. You can find me via email at yankonthefooty@gmail.com. All of my socials have links on my website at yank underscore on X or Twitter. Folks, I do appreciate the kind words, the continued support, your generosity with your time listening to the podcast. I know there are lots of options for podcasts. I listen to a lot of podcasts, and I thank you for making my podcast part of your listening week. And as always, ladies and gentlemen, may your dribble kick never hit the post. I will catch you later. And this has been episode 320 of A Yank on the Footy. Again, thanks for listening. Please share the podcast with your friends and family and leave a review. And until next time, cheers.